Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It is the return of the Top Chef Judges Roundtable podcast here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're so happy to be here. Mike Bloom here talking about the season 15 premiere of Top Chef. And with the return of Top Chef comes the return of the Judges Table podcast. I am joined by a motley crew of reality TV podcasters as we're going to talk about this and each and every episode of season 15 of Top Chef. We're going something old, something new, something borrowed. I guess that makes me the something Bloom in this regard. Let's start with the first one. Welcome back to the podcast, Kurt Clark. Kurt, how are you?
Good. I guess I'm something old. But yeah, I'll take it. Just, you know, put me in the freezer and save me until you need to reheat me and use me again.
Oh boy. No. Well, then Tom will call you warmed over leftovers like he did with Melissa's dish that sent her out. The something new is not necessarily new. We've heard her a few times in the past season, but she's a big Top Chef fan and we're so happy to bring her into the judges roundtable proper. Haley Strong, this is your official welcome to the podcast.
Wow, this is really a dream come true. I can't believe I'm sitting here. I can't believe I finally get to talk about Top Chef. Like, not finally, I guess, but like I get to consistently talk about it and not just hold all my feelings inside like I usually have to.
Yeah, so a little bit of changes to this podcast that we should probably give you at the top here. So usually in the past three seasons, we have been joined by Josh Wigler and Antonio Mazzaro. Unfortunately, due to time commitments on both of their ends, those of you that may know Josh and Antonio know that they are both extremely busy men in their own right. They unfortunately are not going to be able to join us as an official panel member. We are definitely hopeful that we can grab them to do a couple of guest spots down the season when their schedules lighten up. So they will no longer be a permanent part of the judges table, but they'll definitely be making a bunch of appearances. Consider them, Emeril, if you will, when he was a permanent judge and then he came back to guest a couple times.
Just more food for us.
Yes, exactly. We have a big old potluck of an episode to dig into. Something else that's fun that I'm doing new for this season is we're going to have a little bit of an additional perspective as well into Top Chef. I just got the green light this past week that I am going to be doing exit interviews for Top Chef for Parade.com, with which I've been doing Survivor and Big Brother exit interviews this year so far. So I will be talking with the first chef testant eliminated in the next couple days, and I'll be doing that each and every week. So that'll lend a little nice coloring to our commentary as well, that I'll be able to speak directly with the person who had to pack their knives and go, not necessarily get eliminated from Last Chance Kitchen, but at least pack their knives and go proper. So who knows, maybe later on this season, we might be joined by some other reality TV stars or chef testants in the past. Really, the world is our oyster and we're here to shuck it.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Yep.
You went there.
Oh, yeah. This is what happens when I take the hold of the podcast. We just go into full bloom right off the bat.
So you're saying the world is our Rocky Mountain oyster is what you're saying.
Oh, boy. Just got to bite in there and hope you don't get a vein between your teeth there. So
is it too late to back out of this?
Nope.
Nope. You signed a contract.
All right.
That's what the fine print's for. You're here.
Damn.
I should also mention, we have a lot of stuff to get to. We have an entire episode as well as two episodes of Last Chance Kitchen. There's also a bunch of miscellaneous things. I actually went to a panel at the 92nd Street Y last week, a few days before the premiere, where they had a panel with Padma, Gail, Tom, and Graham Elliott to talk a little bit about the show. Additionally, I have been watching Top Chef Junior on Universal Kids for the past couple months, and I can talk a little bit about that as well, just to give some context and thumbs up or thumbs down to it in general. But let's get into the episode proper, the meat and potatoes, if you will. Kurt, overall, what do you think about this premiere?
I thought it was really solid. We got a chance to, maybe just because I take notes during the episode, but I feel like I have a decent grasp of most, if not all, of the contestants. And I think it was really interesting how they handled the quick fire challenge in terms of the judging. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more. But I thought it was a really solid start to the season.
Mm-hmm. Haley, what about you?
I was just so excited for Top Chef to be back that it was hard for me to find any flaws with it whatsoever. I thought the episode moved along super well. I thought we got to know quite a bit of the cast right off the bat, which was nice. I thought it was a really fun quickfire and a really awesome challenge too.
Yeah, it was interesting. I would almost, again, call this episode sort of meat and potatoes in that I think on paper, it was very simple. But I feel like that's a way you want to start off a season, especially an all new player season. You know, last season we had the vets and the new players, so you kind of had to deal with those different types of factors. But with such simple challenges like here, represent your stuff through a potluck dish and do your take on meat and potatoes, you know, you're really setting you're not really putting a lot of bumpers up for them to bowl with. You know, you're really saying go crazy. And as a result, I thought we got some really good dishes, and I'll agree with you both. Maybe it was because of the extended runtime, but we really got to know all 15 of these people, which makes me really excited because that's not always the case with Top Chef.
Yeah, sometimes like during the early quick fires in the season, you'll see, you know, with 16 chefs or 15 chefs, you'll maybe visit, you know, 9 or 10 of the dishes. Here we got to see all the quickfire dishes except for two. And then the two folks who we didn't see the quickfire dishes for, turns out they are kind of prominently featured in the actual elimination challenge in the form of Fatima and Adrian. So, you know, between the quickfire and then ultimately the elimination challenge, kind of good profile time for everybody.
So I want to talk a little bit about the start of this episode. I will admit, a little bit of an awkward opening for me, at least, where everyone just, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm used to like the pomp and circumstance of like, welcome to Top Chef. Everyone just sort of like walks in there, and Padma's like, yeah, you can come in, guys. It's all right. Like, just stand on your marks. I also rewatched this episode, and I pointed out a really fun moment in foreshadowing when Padma's like, you guys got any jitters, any nerves? And who do they cut to but Miss Melissa, Miss Nerves herself?
Yeah, I like that she's pointed out that in her preparation, she's had two panic attacks, which is, I think, pretty much how I would approach anything like this.
Yeah, Melissa's interesting. We'll definitely talk more about her in that I feel like she actually kind of represents like an everyman's approach to being on a reality TV show, where I feel like in a lot of shows that we cover, there's a lot of over the top camera ready personalities. But Melissa's definitely someone who's like, yeah, I applied to this show and now I'm on here and I'm scared out of my mind, which I feel like if any one of us were on a show, that would probably be the temperament that we would have. All right, so let's get into the challenge itself. Cook a potluck dish. Haley, I'm assuming you've been a frequenter at many potlucks in your life. How do you think this worked as a first challenge?
Are you inferring that I have friends? Because that is not the case. Why do you think I spend all of my time on the internet? I thought this challenge really worked. I love the idea of cook us any dish in this amount of time that shows you who you are. Let's skip the introductions for now. And then we're all going to sit down together. We're all going to taste each other's food and kind of see where you're coming from. I love this challenge. I would love to see this in every season from here on out. I just thought it was a really cool way to introduce people and their style of cooking and what it is that they do. It was awesome. And I wanted to try most things, I would say.
Yeah, I think, and it's funny, like introductions, I think one of the first things we realize is like one of the first chefs that we're introduced to is Bruce. And it's funny is that he's like the one person who seemed to like need no introduction among the rest of the cast. It seemed like, you know, they're
the
at least,
judges
or the judges. Yeah. It's like, oh, I know Bruce. A full disclosure, I know him, too. It's like, yep. You know, he used to, you know, godfather to my children. That's Bruce. so I was like, I don't know where they're going to go with that. I think that's something to kind of keep an eye on. But he almost seems to be a shining star, if you will, at least in terms of brightness and visibility. So I think we're going to have to kind of keep an eye on Bruce in the upcoming episodes.
I would say that all of them are shining stars, but Bruce is like the Big Dipper. Like, oh, everyone knows these constellation, but everyone knows the Big Dipper. And it's interesting, you know, we unfortunately have Antonio Mazzaro in absentia, but Bruce kind of looks like if Antonio stuck his finger in a light socket.
I won't lie. I was thinking the same thing, not about the light socket, but saying, hey, wait, there's a little bit of a passing Antonio resemblance here with our friend Bruce.
Maybe that's why he couldn't do it. Maybe Bruce is related to him and he like had to sign an NDA because he knew how Bruce would do.
So we're saying that like in like 5 or 6 episodes, we're going to see Antonio and Bruce on opposite sides of a dividing wall. And one of them said, okay. And Bruce is going to be directing Antonio on how to cook. Okay. I understand completely now.
Yes, absolutely. And they'll be throwing shrimp heads around each other. Also, to go back to what you said before, Haley, I feel like we need to have like an RHAP podcasters like potluck over the internet. I have no idea how that would be done, but I feel like it needs to happen.
That sounds amazing. What would you make for your potluck? besides buttered noodles?
I mean, I guess you make, what is that? I know, like, I guess I have to make pink chicken because does that represent me? I guess I would. Well, I guess, do you do like an internet thing by, like, I don't know, do you send each other like gift cards to restaurants and that's how you do like a potluck?
Or we could all order the same like Blue Kitchen thing. Is that called
Blue, Blue Apron? Blue Apron. You're close. It was okay.
Yeah. You got the color right.
All I know is if we had like a big group dinner, that Mike would be in short charge of the man hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah. Yes, I admire your wordplay so much. I'm so happy this podcast is back already. By the way, another fun fact, this is I'll save my 92nd Street Y seminar thoughts for the end, but one thing that I should have mentioned here while we're getting like the opening shots of Padma doing her best Maria von Trapp in the mountains, apparently every time they did that scene, Padma was puking between takes because I'm sure it's something we'll notice throughout the season. Altitude sickness is a thing, and it's going to become very, very prominent as the more they're prolonged to this Denver air.
I hadn't thought of that. I know that we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get into the episode. But there does appear to be a point where the aforementioned Bruce was struggling. And I know that RHAP patron Mike Doskus asked if there'd ever been a medevac on Top Chef before, because he's thinking that Bruce might be a good candidate for one. And yeah, this I hadn't thought about the altitude as something that was going to potentially be affecting them.
Yeah, well, to answer Mike's question a little bit, we've had it a couple of times. I think the closest we've gotten to it is actually in two finales. Actually, one of them dealt with altitude sickness back in season 3. Casey Thompson, I believe it took place in Aspen, the final, I want to say. And she was a front runner and she pretty much got sidelined because she might have gotten altitude sickness. And then in season 7, another situation where Angelo, who was also, again, a big front runner at the time, got waylaid by a sickness. They both recovered enough to cook, but I do not think it bode well for their chances. So who knows? I think we'll definitely have to pay attention to that, because I'm assuming, especially running around the kitchen, like if you're going to get much more winded than you usually do, that I mean, we saw even someone like Sheldon get through like slipped discs last season. Things might get even more serious this time.
I guess I just associate any place. I associate Denver and Colorado with being snowy all year, which I know is not the case because I've been there in like May. But it's like anytime I associate, like I always have this mental picture of just snowy mountains. And for some reason, I always associate that with Canada as well. So for some reason, I have this vision of Haley as being completely acclimated to altitude. So I was going to turn it over to her and see. But it's like, I guess not all Canada is at that level.
No, Louisiana got more snow this weekend than I did. And Niagara is a very, not super flat, but it's like more flat than, the West Coast. We're definitely not in the Rockies. Altitude sickness, not something I deal with in my everyday life.
We're going to be banishing all sorts of myths and rumors about Canada during the course of this season.
Yeah, welcome to the Top Canada podcast.
Yeah, that's why we brought you in, Haley, is that as we know, every episode of Top Chef last season, we always dispelled some sort of myth about Canada. Now we have someone to finally fact check it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm here to dispel myths about Canada and being a woman on this show. So here we are.
Yes. Well, we get an introduction to some of our contestants here as we begin to work through their first dishes. We have Chris talking about what exactly Amish soul means, which is basically like he calls it hee-haw background with some Philly grit, which sounds like the weirdest like Green Acres, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air like mashup I've ever heard. We hear a little bit from Tanya, who seems very illustrious. I know that Bruce is our big dipper, but Tanya seems like Orion in that she's been trained in France. She's written 2 books. She has her own restaurant. And then we get a little bit from Tyler as well. Tyler decides to make his own chorizo. We got Joe S. All right, let's get this out of the way. Yeah. Let's talk about Joe's mustache a little bit here. I know that we also, were we not encouraged to go with a specific nickname for Joe S as well?
We had a couple folks in the patron group, particularly, PJ, asking if we could call him Joe Stash to differentiate the two. In my notes, I go with MJ, which is Mustache Joe. Can we use Joe Stash to differentiate him from Joseph? Movember's done. So I wonder, and even though this wasn't filmed last month, I'm assuming he still has the mustache. That seems to be a defining part of our friend Joe Stash.
Mm-hmm. If this was America's Next Top Model, one of them would have to change their name and go by something stupid.
Like Joe Stash.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly.
Haley, what is your feeling on Joe's mustache?
I do not hate it. I kind of love it. It's like a long con joke to me. Like, I think it's funny. And if that's not what, like, if comedy wasn't what he's going for with that mustache and that I've got the wrong impression there, well, then I'm sorry, Joseph. But I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, I think that I'll admit that, like, going into this, I would say that if we have a quote unquote villain, it might be Joe Stash, but it might just be because, as Chris is going to put it, he has a mustache of someone who would tie a character to the train tracks. I think it just unfortunately comes with the image.
Yeah, is he the villain or is his facial hair the villain? Like, are these two separate entities?
Yeah, I can't wait for the mustache to, like, I don't know, take control of Joe's mind at one point during Restaurant Wars, and he just really goes aggro.
Like, usually in a season of Top Chef, especially over the past few years, they've relied heavily on the bearded male chef as something to kind of steer into. And here I'd say, like, the trophy for facial hair of the season is going to be going to Joe. I mean, Bruce is bearded, but you don't have, like, these kind of standout facial hair beards this year. And normally I'm, like, completely against facial hair for the purpose of trying to stand out or make a statement. But luckily Joe has enough of a personality. He's not using the mustache as a crutch that I don't completely hate it like I normally would.
Not using it as a crutch stash?
Crutch stash, yes.
Yeah, I would say that I guess this puts him on, like, the mustache Mount Rushmore of Top Chef contestants as well, right? We have him. We have Pork Josh from season 10. I think Tyler from season 9 had a mustache as well. Maybe I'm forgetting someone, but we might need someone to round that out.
Yeah, we can't do a 3-person Mount Rushmore. We just can't.
No, absolutely not. I don't know what it would be. It would be the three Pep Boys instead of Mount Rushmore. Let's move into the actual quick fire dishes themselves. Haley, did you have any personal highlights of the dishes that were presented in the potluck?
The winning dish, the corn salad, looked pretty delicious. And I'm always here for a soup. So not the chowder, but I feel like there was another soup going on that I was into.
Was it Rogelio? He did the chorizo stew with candied beans and jalapenos.
No, because didn't his chorizo end up not great?
No, that was Tyler. Tyler got the side eye from Miss Claudette. not the Orange is the New Black character, but she gave him some serious side eye for him saying chorizo.
We have we're playing a podcast match game again, Mike, because in my notes I have Claudette side eye.
Yes, I really hope this is a running thing throughout as well.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
What about you, Kurt? Any highlights from this group of potluck dishes?
I was intrigued by actually the... I was saying there are a lot of dishes I was intrigued by until it got to the fennel. And we kind of talked about this over the past couple seasons.
Every time there was like a, top with fennel salad, I was like, ooh, Kurt would hate this.
Yeah, it's like... I'd love to be a judge on one of these shows, but it's one of those things where last season, what I can't remember what it was that Tom hated, and some of the chefs.
Oh, he hates okra. Too slimy.
Okra, yeah. Too slimy. If we're doing like some SAT stuff here, okra is to Tom as fennel is to Kurt. And it's one of those things where I just don't know if I could get, I'd have to get in my mind and say, okay, apart from the fact that I hate this one element, can I get past it and judge the dish? I mean, and luckily I've found over time that, you know, cooking fennel, I'm good with that. It's like when it's used kind of cold or raw sometimes, we'll talk a little bit about that when we get to Last Chance Kitchen, that I can't go for it. But every time it's like, oh, that sounds good. That sounds good. And fennel. I'm like, no. So I think I would have gone for probably Claudette's mole coloradito. If I'm pronouncing that right, I'm a sucker for a good mole, and it seemed like that was liked by several people at the table. So I think that was something that I was most interested in, probably.
Yeah, this one wasn't in the top, but I'm a sucker for chicken wings in any way, shape, or form. So Tanya's chili honey glazed chicken wings with grilled cabbage slaw sounded incredible, and even Tom pointed out that, like, it's gutsy to go for something as simple as a chicken wing. We even got some Bruce shade earlier on when he's like, oh, I wanted to make sure I grabbed the meat that I wanted because I don't want to be left with something stupid like chicken wings. And cut to Tanya being like, I'm making some chicken wings. So I'm happy that it worked out for her. You mentioned this before, Kurt. So the judges, even though they give their remarks, they're not deciding who wins the first quick fire and subsequently immunity. The contestants vote for each other. Haley, what did you think about that as a way to start off the first challenge of the season?
This was fine for me. I think I would have preferred the judges pick, but I liked that the other chef contestants had to give reasons why a certain dish was weaker than another.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but my thing is, like, they could have easily been influenced by the judges, be like, oh, the judges thought the bruschetta was boring, so like that's why I should vote that my least favorite or something, you know what I mean?
I'm wondering if they had, I mean, this is like, you know, peeking way behind the curtain more than we need to. Like, I'm wondering, like, the gamer in me is wondering, did they have to put their names on on their sheet so that they were shown that they couldn't vote for themselves, or were they given, like, you know, named ones with their name left off of the list? Because I'm wondering if they were able to, if they were voting anonymously, they might have been like less influenced by the judges. But I'm guessing that they kind of had to put their names on there so that the staff could verify. By the way, Padma gets the official title of honorary junior tabulator for her efforts in sitting there and kind of chalking these up by hand. But I'm sure that they had to have their names on them to kind of see. They all knew who voted for who.
Just do you think any of the chef contestants tried to stuff the ballot box?
I kept an eagle eye out for that, and I
no,
don't
you know what,
so.
You know what was, you know what would happen? Two would stuff the ballot box with everyone else's names. That's what he would do.
Yeah. I think he'd be helping other people, but in the end, he ended up winning. And, you know, for something that was, you know, largely, I want to say it was, I had to look up what a salpicon was, and it seems like there's multiple varieties of it, and it's often just a one or more, the Wikipedia definition of it was like one or more ground ingredients held together by a liquid or base of some sort. So but it said it was a corn salpicon. I wasn't sure if there was any protein in there or not. But I was surprised that something so simple won necessarily. But it seemed like, you know, it did put him out ahead of everybody else, and gave him a little bit more confidence in the elimination challenge to take risks in both his own dish and other people's dishes.
I was gonna say take risk as in like basically tank your own dish, but we're definitely talk about that. Going back to Haley's point, it's interesting. I'm happy that they made this the first challenge instead of bringing this up down the line, because I feel like if there's a time to do it, it's now, when nobody knows each other except for Bruce.
For Bruce.
I'm actually surprised that Bruce didn't end up winning, because everyone's just like, oh, I know Bruce. It's like when the, you know, when people say that the Academy Award voters like don't watch a lot of the movies, they just like look at what's familiar and they just check off the box there.
Yeah, it's or maybe it was like, though, so many other people know, it's kind of like the diffusion of responsibility. So many other people know Bruce that they'll probably vote for him. So I'm free to vote for whoever I want to.
Oh, yeah, it's the bystander principle.
Exactly. But yeah, but I agree. It's like, I mean, if they're going to do it, I'm hoping it isn't a recurring thing. And this was, I think, the best place to do it before they're potentially biased by any infighting or anything like that. But I'm guessing that Claudette did not vote for Tyler.
Yes, that's probably the one vote we could discern. We might have to see the secret voting confessionals just to make sure. A couple other things we find out about the chef contestants as we go down the line here. Tyler is from Simsbury, Connecticut, my home state. But he talks about how, you know, he's definitely a farm chef, literally farm to table. He gives the great line, it all starts on an effing farm. And we get a good story here on probably one of the best named contestants in Top Chef history, Brother Luck. Haley, give me your thoughts on Brother Luck here by pure name alone.
Great last name. As somebody who also has a fantastic last name, he can join my club. Like, do you think his sibling is named Sister, or like, you know, or like it's like Dan and then like Dan's brother?
So you think that there was an initial kid, then the sibling got bored and they couldn't figure out a name, so like, okay, well, he's technically Dan's brother, so we'll just name him Brother to keep things easy.
I mean, probably, right?
Well, yeah, I'm wondering, because you go back to the whole brother and sister thing, like, were they expecting, like, what if he was an only child? That would probably be the most depressing thing. Like, oh, we're going to call him brother because he's going to have more siblings, and he just ends up not having any.
Or what if he's, like, a twin?
Ooh, what would the other one be named? Other brother?
Or sister.
That's true. Brother and sister luck.
I guess if he's got, like, five older sisters and the family finally has a boy, then brother luck makes sense. But it begs the question, what is the sibling situation here? Maybe if you get him on an exit interview, that's one of the questions you spend the entire time on, is breaking down his family tree.
Or brother, when you inevitably listen to this podcast, can you just tweet us? Thank you.
The fun thing about this as well is that, like, so when I heard beforehand, like, oh, there's going to be someone doing Amish soul food. I don't know anything about the Mennonites, but I'm like, brother luck sounds like someone who came from an Amish community. And of course, it's not him whatsoever. He's someone who actually admits he has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He had been working in a hotel restaurant for quite some time until someone called him a hotel chef almost despairingly. And just to stick it to them, he decided to open his own restaurant. Literally like 3 days before coming onto the show. How stressful must that be, Kurt?
We know that on this and some of the other kind of more creative shows, I think like Project Runway, that they do allow them much more frequent access to phone home than say like on a Survivor or Big Brother. So you can, you know, bet damn well he's probably checking in every evening on just making sure everything is going okay.
Okay, what's more nerve wracking? Leaving your restaurant that just opened 3 days ago, or leaving your wife who's about to give birth in 3 days?
I mean, they're one and the same, right? you're giving birth to a concept in either way. But yeah,
here's the difference. In one situation, a person can't hold it over you for the entirety of your life.
That's true.
Like, I know if my husband left and I had a kid without, like, when he was gone, oh boy, would I ever, you know, be like, yeah, well, you left to go be on reality TV while I had to pop this thing out.
You don't understand, honey. Everyone knew who I was. I couldn't give up an opportunity.
Or you could just pull a Leanne Haley and go on a show to yourself while you're pregnant.
Yeah, that seems like a lot, eh?
Yeah.
we'll talk about that as well.
I would use that to my advantage in the kitchen. I, you know, if someone was like, I had to race somebody to go do something, I'd be like, oh my god, my water just broke, and they like stop to take care of me, and then I book it.
Two would be your like doula. He'd be your Tula the entire time, being like, how can I help you? Like, do you need any? Do you need a pillow? So let's talk. Let's go back to the quick fire here, really quick. The bottom two dishes voted least liked by the fellow chef testants were from Melissa and Carrie. Melissa's potatoes were cooked inconsistently, which will definitely be a moment of retribution coming up very soon. Carrie, the bruschetta was not a good choice, and it just was very muddled. The top were the two Joes, Joe Stash making his own pasta, which was a big feat to do. Joe F., Mr. Woodfire. And two, as mentioned before, Tom decides to throw Chris's dish in there as well for his own contention. But two wins immunity as we move into the elimination challenge. Create your own take on meat and potatoes. Apparently, Denver was a meat and potatoes type of city since it was colonized. Now it's on the up and up. Haley, what do you think about this challenge?
I love carbs. So give me any potato challenge and I'm so in. Meat, interesting too, because like I just feel like you could go in so many directions with like meat and potatoes that it really leaves a lot for creativity. And you know, meat and potatoes, oh, that kind of sounds like a boring challenge, but I feel like a lot, like everyone made something completely different, which was super interesting.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of hoping that Laura was going to be actually able to find reindeer to present some authentic Alaskan cuisine.
That would have been fantastic. That would have been so cool.
Although, one of the patrons, I'll, you know, quickly jump over to my notes, but I think one of the things that they asked over in the patron group, actually, no, this was on Twitter. GOT Recaps on Twitter asked how many times someone will mention altitude in the course of this show. So far, nobody in the show has actually mentioned the altitude. Maybe that's going to come up. But I'm keeping track of how many times it's mentioned that Laura is from Alaska and how many kind of like Alaskan stories we end up getting. And so far, there's been quite a few. I think there's like three in just the initial episode alone. But I'm loving it. I mean, Joseph's like, yeah, she seems like an Alaskan lady, but that's meant as a compliment. So I would have loved to have actually, you know, she doesn't have Whole Foods in Alaska, but it would have been great if they'd actually had some reindeer on hand for her.
Yeah, let's talk about Laura for a second. I thought for a second, maybe this was me reading too much into the Top Chef edit. I thought she was going to be the first boo because I thought she was going to be the person that's like almost like what happened with Melissa, where like she's in way over her head and she's a little too quirky, a little too out there, which can happen a couple times in Top Chef. But it seems like she's here to stay, at least for now. Haley, do you think that her quirkiness is derived from her location, or do you think it's just a completely separate personality from the geography?
I feel like they're tied together, right? Like so much of her personality is based on the fact that she's from Alaska.
Much like a reindeer to Santa's sleigh.
Yeah, because like there's so few people around. So, you know, you can't like develop a personality with like no people around.
Well, we've already established that, you know, Canada isn't at a high altitude across it, but you live with reindeer, right? Right, Haley?
Yeah, I live with reindeer. I am okay. They're in our barn in the back.
But I think at least I didn't think she was going anywhere only because she seemed very self-aware of some of the limitations she was facing. And I'm speaking specifically about how, you know, we don't have Whole Foods, but she knows from, you know, she's watched this like over the years with her son, and she knows that there's going to be a rush at the protein counter, and there is. And you know, she says that she's going to try to make, you know, bread for 200, but she recognizes that that's ambitious and she's questioning if she's crazy. It's not one of these things where she's going to realize halfway through that it's a terrible idea and she should never have started it. But she, I think that the thing about her that we learn is that she's flexible and she's willing to adapt on the fly, which I think is going to, you know, so I'm going to give her some points in the corner.
That's very Alaskan of her.
Yeah, I'm trying so hard now not to associate Alaska with Canada.
Well, that's probably the best like example of adaptability I've ever seen, is her describing about being like, we have to be adaptable. Sometimes a moose could go on by and eat all your cabbage. You can't make cabbage that night. Hashtag first world Alaska problem.
No, Kurt, I do not have to deal with moose eating my cabbage on a regular basis.
I'm just trying to get all of the false Canadian stereotypes out in a single episode, Haley. I swear this is not going to be something that goes on all season.
I'm pretty sure it is. But...
okay. Don't lie to make friends is what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. So we begin to do some shopping at Whole Foods. We have Tyler say that he's going for the porky, salty, sweetie, and smoky, the four dwarves of pork. Which, who knew the Meat Council finally bought Disney out? I know they've been jockeying for that position for years, but good on them. Seems like we might have a Joe-down throwdown happening with the Battle of the Tartars, though I don't think that ends up actually paying off, does it, Kurt?
Not so much, no. Neither of them. Well, they're both. Sorry, I should say the Tartars are positively received, but they're not. Neither of them end up being in the top three. The one thing that actually was like, uh oh, that's potentially dangerous, is they had 30 minutes to spend $600 in Whole Foods, and at checkout, we learned that Chris, yeah, our Pennsylvania Dutch Amish soul person, said he spent $186. At Whole Foods. Like he said, $186. I assumed he meant $186. And I'm hoping that either he was joking, and if not, then that's crazy that he was able to feed 200 for $186. He was just being facetious, I'm hoping,
and
right?
At Whole Foods too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like he brought like three grapes probably for that amount.
Yeah. So I thought that when he said I spent about $186, I didn't even until now think that maybe he was joking and saying $1.86. Like I assumed he meant $186. And if that's the case, and he only spent about a third, less than a third of his budget.
He doesn't have to spend any on electricity, so it's fine.
That's true. Although we are missing that. I think if they actually had gone full Amish and brought in somebody from the Pennsylvania Dutch countryside here, that would have been our beard person for the season, and that, yes, might have won faithful hair.
That would have been our hat person as well. They really are the most. That would be a good Rumspringa. Like I'm gonna go to reality. I'm gonna do Top Chef and decide if this is for me. All right, so let's segue into the kitchen here as we begin to see the judges walk through as people begin to work on things. Rogelio gets a little bit of side eye from Tom for saying he is going to make croquettes as he goes tomorrow. Laura, as you talked about before, all the ovens are being used, a problem that very quickly happens in Top Chef seasons with a big number of chefs. She decides to go to PETA.
But like, why isn't there more ovens?
It's a dog-eat-dog world.
I guess, but like, it makes no sense to me.
I mean, I'm guessing there has to be at least the 15 ovens, right? And then I'm just wondering if maybe there's some chefs who
use more than one,
either because of volume or food or because of cooking temperatures. But I would have, you know, if that had been the situation I ran into and I made it to episode 2, I would have said something at the house like, you know what? Let's just have the standing rule that, you know, this is so-and-so's oven. And if you need an additional oven, you have to get permission from them. I'm all about sharing, and sharing is caring. So,
well, I think they also do this to like instigate drama as well. I'm pretty sure in season 11, your boy Nicholas, Kurt, like there was this big thing, I think, during Restaurant Wars or another episode where like someone took his stuff out of the oven or cranked his oven up to a certain temperature. So like it instigates drama when you have to fight over limited resources.
We do see even in times when we don't necessarily hear that there's a limited number of cooking resources. It seems like at least once a season, you do have, hey, did somebody adjust the temperature on my oven over here? Like, even if it's not like fighting for actual real estate, there often seems to be some accusations at some point of ingredients going missing or temperatures being adjusted. So yeah, I think that, but it did surprise me. I was feeling for Tanya.
All right. So let's get to, I would say, the main piece of this post Whole Foods section, which is Bruce is not doing well. Surprisingly, for someone of a man of such prestigious, of notoriety, he's having trouble putting the finishing touches and getting everything ready before they have to ship things off to Larimer Square the next day. Two has a little bit of extra time. He really respects Bruce, so he decides to pitch in and help, which again earns some hashtag Claudette side eye. Haley, are you on team two or team Claudette here in terms of what two should have done?
I'm kind of on team Claudette. Like, I think two is awesome and a great guy for doing it. Would I do it? No, because I'm lazy.
Well, that's not even that's not even for competition. You're just saying it because you don't want to do it.
Yeah, I just like wouldn't do it. And be like, what are you talking about? I'm busy over here, not doing anything. It's like a super nice thing for him to do, but like, you know, it's a competition. Like,
and I don't think it doesn't seem like I think Claudette's side eye was more directed at Bruce than two. It seemed like two is done. He was probably looking around. It wasn't really, we'll talk about the actual day of the event. It seems like it was, you know, two's decision to help out Joe Stash that potentially, you know, tanked his dish more so than this. But, you know, Claudette's got, not just Claudette, Tyler, several of the chefs, some colorful language this season. I'm not going to repeat just to for the purposes of RHAP standards, what Claudette said it made Bruce look like. But I'm liking Claudette's use of vocabulary here.
Yeah, I don't personally fault too. I'm fine with helping people as long as it doesn't directly hurt yourself. Like you said, Kurt, like he was already done. It's what happens the next day when he is helping someone which directly contributes to his own dish tanking. And that's when you really get into a muddy area. But do you think, Haley, this is going to become a recurring theme throughout the season? Or do you think like two sort of learned his lesson when Padma slapped him on the wrist and said you would be in the bottom if you decided not to have immunity?
No, I think it's going to be a reoccurring issue, and I think that's going to be what sends him home eventually.
Ooh, all right. Bold claim here from Miss Strong. Two is going to go out for being two. Nice guys finish last in the case of two. All right, let's get to the house here. Not much I want to say. I do like the bear den that has formed between Bruce, Tyler, and other Joe.
Joseph. You mean the sleep apnea den?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Do you think they actually have sleep apnea machines, or do you think Tyler was just making cracks about their
They
weight?
Should, if not.
No, they were looking for outlets. I mean, this is, I literally believe, like, we're two big guys with sleep apnea machines. And I loved that he's like, Joseph, he's just younger. He'll have a machine in 3 to 4 years. So I'm pretty sure that this is a legitimate thing.
Yeah, Tyler is definitely my candidate for like best confessional giver this season already. He's so dry, but has some of the best sound bites.
Oh, yeah. He's talking about having like the tattoo of an entire fry cooker on his back. But kind of like, OK, not really. But he's I think the go to for confessional gold so far.
And we also get a little bit here from Miss Side-Eye of Claudette that she's a single mom of two, so she really hasn't had a lot of roommates in her life. But everyone gets settled in the night, even though Bruce might need more than his sleep apnea machine to sleep soundly, because he is nervous as all heck that things are not going to pan out for him and he's going to be the first one sent home, which does not, you know, pay off to fruition. But Haley, at this point, did you think that Bruce might have a chance of going home?
No, but I thought he had a chance of dying.
Yeah, going home in a different regard then.
Not going home as much as like going to into the grave or something.
So I guess what he ultimately was doing was like on in the kitchen day, he was making his dough and prepping his dough. And just because he at the actual event, he was going to be making the gnocchi on site, correct?
Yeah. So and he okay. He also sort of like talks about that. But next day to Fatima, I think about like, oh, I have to make this from scratch, which again, sort of like Joe Stash making pasta earlier, making it to order or making it as you go can be a little risky to keep track of. But it seems like he pulled it off. So we segue into the next day here, the day of the big cook here in Laramo Square, where apparently the Broncos do their own little post Super Bowl. Kerry has apparently worked there like five times. What do we think about Kerry's like hometown pressure? Do you feel like she suffers in an extra regard because she feels like she needs to bring it home for them?
She's a little too earnest for me.
Okay. Okay. Do you think that's the Midwest part of her?
Okay. And there's like on this season, they look like someone from last season. Like Kerry looks like Emily.
Okay. I can kind of see it.
When I saw the first preview, I messaged Mike and was like, did they bring back Sylvia from last season? Because there's someone who looks exactly like her, and that's Fatima. And then Bruce looks like every male chef, pretty much.
Wow, that's a wine, Ned.
Well, because you will see Haley recognizes him too.
Yeah, I recognize him from every other season of Top Chef combined into one. It's sort of like those Morphomatic challenges that they do on Big Brother. But we talked about this before. Two sort of falls on his own sword here, where Joe Stash needs a pot to work with, and Joe Stash decides to loan his out in lieu of getting these like hotel induction burners, which scorch his pan and ultimately send his dish to the presumptive bottom.
Yeah, it's interesting. So like, it sounded like the issue was that the fryers that were on site weren't going to be hot enough for Joe to cook his dish. Two then recommended that he use induction, to which, you know, Joe Stash says, well, I don't have a pot. Oh, you can use mine. So it's kind of, I'm wondering to what extent like this is like, to what extent did the producers let the contestants know what equipment's going to be available on site? And were they just told that there were fryers, and did Joe not ask the right questions, or did he just assume? But it's kind of also a situation where Two puts himself in the position of like, hey, have you ever thought about doing this? And Joe's like, well, I can't because I don't have the right equipment. It's like, well, I just recommended that to you, so I guess I should lend you the equipment to do that, which I need myself, but I will get around it by using these induction burners and hope I don't scorch my food, which he does.
Yeah, so you think he just didn't want to be an asshole of like, oh, you should do that. Oh, you don't have a pot. Sorry, I guess you're SOL.
Yeah, I think unlike Haley, I think that maybe this first episode, this first instance of it is potentially going to be enough to have Two not do this again down the road.
No, I think he's going to do it again and then be like, shit, I shouldn't have done it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Like he can't, I think his automatic thing is to like help and say yes, and he can't help himself. And then like afterwards, he's going to regret it, but he's never going to be like, you know what, Joe Stash, I actually need that pot. Can you give it back? Like he's never going to say that, but he's always going to be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to help you. Like that's just going to be his automatic.
I don't know. I kind of hope at this point he does a heel turn in the middle and he just becomes like evil Two. He becomes he'd be a Oot Two backwards, and he'll just be like completely malevolent. Maybe he'll borrow Joe's mustache and he'll just like start turning over people's pots, like start hiding things. Like I want to see him do that just to show the complete shift from good to evil.
I think with like Haley and me, you have two people who would both be like, you know what? No, just do it yourself. Sorry, you're SOL. And so it's hard for me to imagine. No, he's going to do it again. But yeah, maybe like I think if he has immunity, he'll be more willing. I'm hoping he'll
learn. Automatic. That's just the type of guy he is. He's like his first thought is to be like, oh yeah, I can do this. Yes, take this thing. Like he can't help himself.
It does make me stretch. it does make me want to see him interact with pregnant Leanne then and LCK at some point.
All right, so let's get to the elimination dishes themselves. Kurt, any highlights for you among the 15?
I liked, again, that we got to see a lot of Fatima's dish in the, because again, she was one of the two people who we didn't have a quick fire for. So we didn't really get introduced to her until I can't remember if it was on the, I believe it was on the drive to Whole Foods.
Yeah, when she,
where she's talking about,
go ahead.
I would say, she's talking about the.
She's Haley, talking, are all about, Canadians polite? Yes or no?
Of course.
Check that off the list.
Myth busted.
But she's talking about the influence that Padma had, like seeing her on the BBC Food TV, and so I really wanted her to do well, and I liked the feedback that she got about the samosas that she made, and not just the fact that she was like the only chef who used chicken instead of beef, but how is the you could see her face light up when Padma said, "You've really got that chaat pate, that Indian umami, the feeling," and then complimented her sauce work as well. So I think out of all of the dishes, other than just as a random aside, I was interested about Laura's marinated flank steak sandwich. I was really interested in trying the samosas that Fatima had made.
Yeah, and I love the fact that she might be the first chef to geek out over Padma. I feel like all the other chefs have like geeked out over like seeing Tom and Gail, or like when they bring in like, Wiley Dufresne and all these other random chefs, they geek out over them. But she might be the first one to be like, oh my God, I get to see Padma.
Do I need to remind you of Kwame and Padma from last season?
Well, that's geeking out for a different reason.
Okay.
That's a different body part. I thought it was a really cool arc to see from her. Haley, any highlights for you from these dishes?
Sorry to be boring, but I'm also going to go with the samosa. Oh my God, it looks so good.
I liked the Padma calling it like a Pakistani nacho as well. That really got me on board.
It was such a simple idea. Like what a great way to go with that. Like potato and meat in a samosa. And then to spin it so that it was like an open face samosa, and I've never seen that before. That is so cool. And my mouth is watering even just like thinking about it.
I think even like during the prep scenes, Fatima so described it as a deconstructed samosa. And I think like the two words that we hear a lot of on Top Chef are deconstructed and rustic. And I think deconstructed just obviously means we're not going to actually put it all together. It's going to be stacked, and rustic means messy, is kind of the code that we've broke out here. But it really was like a deconstructed samosa. Like you said, it was kind of like an open face samosa. And I thought that was really interesting. I was also intrigued by whose dish was the, I think it was Brother Luck's purple potato puree.
Oh and my gosh. What? Didn't that look cool?
I'm surprised they didn't wind up in the top, because they got a lot of compliments about it. They said that like the lamb was cooked perfectly. It was definitely the most colorful dish, so it popped more than the other ones. I guess the top three were just that much better. But I thought Brother Luck did a really good job, at least from an aesthetic perspective. We're viewers. We can only see the food, not taste it. But from at least a visual perspective, it really popped.
Yeah, and I love lamb and I love goat cheese. And so I think I was really interested in that one as well.
Well, with that goat cheese, were you intrigued by Carrie's dish as well?
No, because I'm actually, again, like right below fennel is too much citrus in terms of things I'm not a huge fan of. And so like goat cheese, good. Lemon goat cheese, especially when that kind of ends up being like
overpowering force.
Yeah. Although it seems like it wasn't so much the goat cheese that was bad as much as it was the chips. And some of the chips were burnt and some of them were raw. So it really was kind of the potatoes that did a lot of people in this time.
Yeah, which I guess makes sense that like some, I think it's like a textbook mistake you make on Top Chef is if you like overcomplicate things and you don't focus on the main onus of the challenge that can really do you in. A couple other ones I want to highlight in low light as well. I know he ended up in the top and we'll definitely talk about it, but I really liked Chris's potato waffle with barbecued beef and corn chow chow. Maybe it's just because like waffles are like one of my weaknesses, but like the potato waffle sounds like a great like different take on a latke that I would love to really have.
Yeah, I was thinking, yeah, potato pancakes, potato waffles. It seems like something you could easily do.
And I would say that one person I was surprised actually didn't end up in the bottom was Rogelio, who we found out a little bit more earlier on about how, you know, he was born in Mexico City. His family moved up here to start a new life, and he's been able to like work under some really prestigious chefs. I think Tracy Dujardin might be one of them. But he makes this potato and beef croquettes. He's making them as they go, and he didn't get any compliments from what I heard. They said the meat didn't come through a lot, so I'm surprised he didn't end up at the bottom.
Actually, Tom said that he pulled it off and it tasted good. And I think was just an example of inconsistency in the, like, that they Tom might have gotten, like, the one croquette that had enough beef in it, whereas Gail and Graham were like, well, yeah, the meat actually didn't really come through a whole lot. So I mean, like, he was kind of talked about, and I wondered if he was going to end up in the bottom. I'm sure if you had, like, a fourth place and assuming that two kept his immunity, we would have seen probably Rogelio in the bottom there.
One other thing we want to talk about outside of the dishes. Should we talk about this Padma meat in my mouth moment?
No, I don't want to. It was just kind of like, of course.
Yeah, it was obligatory. Not even like out of context statement. It was like purposeful. Like,
yeah, it was too easy of a joke, honestly. Like, give me a little creative when you're, you know, making sexual innuendos.
Yeah, slow pitch softball here. It's like. Although I wonder if that's a strategy. If you can make the chefs laugh, they're more likely to subconsciously keep you around. It's like, we got to keep, we will keep Joe Stash around, just because, you know, he serves up these easy double entendres for us to, you know, react to. I mean, you know, of course she comes back with the, like, I hate warm, slimy meat in my mouth. I'm like, okay, that's great.
well, just to make sure, you mean like laughing with them, not at them, right?
Yes, I think that's definitely, yeah, laughing at is a good way to go home. Although I had not heard of Crumble Rumble before. I thought that was made up, but apparently it's not, and that actually sounded good, the fried onions and potatoes. So I was at least intrigued by that, and I do like tartare, so I would have tried the battle of the tartars. I would have been interested in at least sampling those.
Yeah, and I like the fact that if this really is the case, Kurt, that like this helped keep Joe Stash in. Now I feel like he needs to consistently one up himself, that he'll basically become like full Michael Scott by the end of it, making That's What She Said jokes at every description of a quickfire challenge.
Oh, please no.
Again, he might be trying to hide behind that mustache. We get to see a couple of cameos here as well. Gregory makes a cameo, so nice to see him back. Jose, great, fine, sure. I'm glad he's here too.
I missed Jose. I completely missed that. I got Gregory, but I missed Jose.
Well, because I feel like Gregory, like Tom was like, hey, how you doing? And then Jose was just sort of like standing there by the side being like, yeah, this is good food. I know that I believe it's Carrie drops his name earlier on in the season as well. So I feel like he's going to be making a cameo.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So the hail pours down as we go to
what you called.
Yeah, it was just
the weather was the weather was definitely hailing.
Yes, it was strong, that's for sure.
Strong Haley. Just like when we're theorizing about the name of Brother Luck, were you named because of the weather that was happening while you were born?
Ooh, that would have been a good one. But no, I was named after a waitress at Pizza Hut.
I vaguely remember you telling that story.
It explains a lot.
Let's get to judges table here. Our tops are Fatima, Chris, and Tyler. Tyler ultimately takes it here. Kurt, did Tyler get was this the correct decision on behalf of the judges?
Well, obviously not having tasted it, I was obviously, you know, most intrigued by, you know, Fatima's dish. But you know, they said it's hard to make, I guess, from my perspective, it's hard to make a potato really stand out. I think if you're making a meat and potatoes dish, you think I got to get the meat right, and the potato has to really support it. But he said Tyler's potatoes were the best in the whole competition, and the stew was really flavorful. So it sounded like, if anything, while there are a lot of good dishes, his was perhaps the one where it balanced two stars on the plate versus having one star and one supporting role. And if that's the case, then I can completely see, you know, that'd be a great rationale for him taking the win on this one.
Yes, the two wasn't on the plate. He was off making some burnt stew by the side.
There we go. Sorry. Yes, that's going to get confusing.
Nope, it's going to be the first of many. I hope two lasts a long time for so many reasons. One of them being all the two puns we can make deliciously on this podcast. What about you, Haley? What'd you think about the top three?
I thought they, like, it was a perfect top three. That's, you know, and obviously the way they edit it, they kind of like lead you to believe that that's who that's going to be. I wanted Fatima to win. Did she? I can't remember.
No, Tyler did.
Oh, well, fuck that. I mean, screw that. Sorry. Kurt's better with the not swearing on these things than I am.
So Tyler wins the challenge, even though he has no fingerprints left.
That's true. Yeah.
What do you really need those for anyway? Yeah. You're better off without the fingerprints, honestly.
I don't know. Now Tyler can't unlock his phone, Haley.
Oh, yeah. See, I forget about those things because I'm still rocking an iPhone 5, so I don't have that sort of technology.
And I think it was Graham who commented, okay, Chris, I'm now starting to understand this concept of Amish soul food. And along with Graham, and we'll ask him, well, first of all, do you think we're going to see Graham Elliott more than two more times in the entire season?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that considering he was at the 92nd Street Y event, it feels like they're really pushing him as a main judge. So maybe it was just like a pure availability thing last season, but I feel like we're going to see him a bunch.
And I thought he really came into his own this episode. Like, yes. I really enjoyed him as a judge. Yes. Whereas I feel like in the past he was just kind of like there. Where this episode, I was like, oh yeah, I'm really enjoying his commentary and his existence. So good job, Graham.
Yes, I'm hoping we see more of him. But like him, I'm now starting to get this concept of Amish soul food. So I at the very least, I can understand now, like, some of this. I'm glad I'm not the only person who's like asking. Even like during the competition, like during the when Tom was visiting the kitchen, he's like, well, you know, what makes this Amish? Oh, he's got the pickling in this case.
I don't get it. So I think he's going to have to invite me to his restaurant so I can try it out.
A little bit of everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Amish flight, even though...
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds great.
That you just flap flap your arms up and down. That's the Amish form of flight. I'm excited as well, because I also feel like we got this in the Patreon group. I think some people are also confusing what Seoul meant. Some felt it was S-O-U-L. Some felt it was like the capital of South Korea, S-E-O-U-L. So like they weren't entirely sure what that meant, but it seems like we're wrapping our heads around, you know, we're not going Swan Yay. You know, this is not just a ubiquitous concept.
Oh, because I watched it with closed captioning on. I'm pretty sure it's S-O-U-L.
So our bottoms here are Adrian, Melissa, and Carrie. Adrian, I think, was the other person, Kurt, who did not have a quick fire dish, but she gets represented here in not such a good light. She makes a tostone that was fine, but the tostone itself was sweet. She decided for some reason to add sweet pork on top of it, and so it was, as Tom said, sweet on sweet. Melissa's pork braised a little too long and ate dry. That fennel salad was the best part.
Sorry.
Curse you, fennel salad.
And then with Carrie, that came out of two things. Basically, the goat cheese was meant to sort of just be a dip, but ended up being overpowering the entire meal. And the chips varied in terms of temperatures. Luckily, they were not flavored, so that's good in my book. Haley, Melissa goes home out of these three. Do you feel like, from our perspective, it was the right choice?
I personally would have eliminated Carrie here. It just, her dishes weren't even, like, they were not good and also not that interesting. Not that Melissa's were, like, groundbreaking or anything. But it was really a toss-up between those two. And I think maybe that Carrie's a hometown girl kind of, like, maybe gave her a little bit of an edge here.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, what about you?
I agree that, at least of the three, that Adrian, it made the most sense for her to stay, I think. And then if you're looking at the other two, you know, they were both in the bottom two, at least as voted by their peers. I don't know. I mean, you're asking me to say, would I have sent her home for the fennel salad? Even though Tom said the fennel salad was the best part of her dish. I was like, I need to go on a tour of the nation and kind of find what are the things that'll make me like fennel. But it's, you know, she said the mashed potatoes also just weren't amazing, according to Graham's. Like, if you're going to have mashed potatoes, it's a pretty simple thing. And so, like, you have to really knock out the water. And at least Carrie kind of tried to do something interesting with kind of these homemade chips. But I can kind of see it from the edit. I had thought maybe Melissa would stay. She described herself as the underdog, and apparently she actually was.
Yeah, I mean, she said before that she, you know, hadn't really been on any television cooking stuff, which, I mean, I don't know if all of them have, but it definitely seems
like, that seems like a weird thing to be like, I'm at a disadvantage. Like, I haven't been on cooking TV. Like, okay.
I don't know. Maybe the camera does add, I think I asked her about this in my interview, actually, like, does the TV production add a certain element of nerves, which were already pretty high for her at that point. I do feel bad for Melissa as well. I do feel like maybe she was in a little bit over her head, and not to like disparage her chef qualities whatsoever, because I think that, like a lot of these other competition shows, like, good chefs do not necessarily do well on Top Chef. Top Chef is a very specific environment that tests your cooking skills that do not necessarily indicate that you are a bad chef if you don't do a good job. But it seemed like, I don't know, we don't really have like too many front runners at this point, which is good. I like sort of everyone running together, but I would say, unfortunately, Sheen seemed to be a couple of paces behind everyone. So if it's a matter of like, let's cut off the weak link and move forward with like a 14 strong chefs, I guess it sort of worked out here.
Carrie is going to have to kind of step things up. But like right now, you've got two chefs in Carrie and Melissa who are at the bottom two on the quickfire and part of the bottom on the elimination challenge. So it's not looking good for Carrie in terms of maybe like the her track record. But at the other hand, if you have people who are consistently performing at the bottom and they're the ones that go early, you do, you know, create the stronger pool of contestants and potentially better TV going down the road. So we'll kind of, you know, see how that ends up turning things around or not.
All right. But Melissa's not completely out of the competition at the moment. She is sent to Last Chance Kitchen, this time with a twist. Before we get to that, either one of you have anything else you want to ask or say about the episode proper?
I would love to hear from Chris whether he actually did, you know, make it into the top three based on just spending a third of his budget. If so, I think that's really interesting. But otherwise, you know, I thought it was pretty straightforward. I always hope that these chefs who perform poorly, like on the quickfire, then completely turn things around. Unfortunately, it just didn't happen this episode, and it was
except two who turned it around.
That's true. Two did turn it around
the wrong direction.
Yeah,
he turned it around much like his cap. All right, let's get to Last Chance Kitchen here. If you don't want to know what happens in Last Chance Kitchen, feel free to hop out right now. We're going to do our draft of our chef testing as we do every season after that. And we'll talk about some miscellaneous stuff. But you can always come back next week and we'll be sure to talk about our drafts, as everyone loves for us to do here on these reality TV wrap-ups. But we'll see you next week if you don't want to know what happens on Last Chance Kitchen. But for right now, we've got two episodes to talk about. Let's talk about the elephant in the room here, folks. Kurt, Tom talked about how LCK would be done a little differently this year. What did he mean?
Well, typically you just have, well, there's a couple different things that are happening differently. Typically, until maybe you get down to the wire in the last few episodes of Last Chance Kitchen, but typically it's two people going head to head. Here, and one person advances and one person kind of then goes to sit in the peanut gallery. Here, we start out, and it seems like for successive weeks, we're going to have a four-way competition in Last Chance Kitchen. And so like in this first episode, we have, I think this might be the other twist he was talking about, is we actually start Last Chance Kitchen pre-populated with returning chefs. And so, yeah, we have our Kwame, our Jen Carroll, our Leanne, and our Marcel. And, you know, one of them is going to go home and, you know, right away prior to the first episode even airing. But then as successive chefs leave the competition, they have to face the three chefs who are remaining in Last Chance Kitchen. And it could, you know, get down to like a few weeks from now, we have two alumni and one new person. And eventually we might have all, you know, new play people as maybe all the alumni get booted. But I think it's a little bit of an easier way to, I think, keep personalities on the screen, even though it's the small screen here instead of the TV.
All right, Haley, give me your thoughts just about this twist overall.
I hate it. it just doesn't make sense to me. I don't think they probably got like the top people they would want, because if you were one of these people or like a former chef testant, why would you say yes to this opportunity? And not even like guarantee yourself a spot in the actual competition, I would say no and wait for next All-Stars. If they really want me that bad, like, they'll call me again. It just doesn't really make sense to me. I don't know. I like the idea of having more people mm-hmm. in the Last Chance kitchen. But putting a bunch of like people who've been on there before and making them fight it out, and then having to see like Jen sit there for the next like 15 weeks, it's just like, what the shit is going on here? Like, I don't know. It's just not my favorite.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, I'm wondering if these are kind of like, well, at least I would say with Marcel and Jen, you've kind of got some big personalities from previous seasons. Kwame was kind of a fan favorite.
But why waste them here?
Well, maybe they just couldn't get a full season, because at least the way that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, the way that I'm kind of conceptualizing is you're not asking like Marcel to step away from his restaurant for a series of successive weeks to, I mean, this is all filmed after everybody's been booted out of the show. Mm-hmm. And so they really just have to come in for, you know, like, you know, 4 or 5 days and battle it out versus having to take weeks away from their business. I'm wondering if that's what it was. It's like, well, I can't actually take the time to step away for the filming of a full season, but I can come in and just do Last Chance Kitchen. One other downside, I was actually having dinner with a fellow rap patron, Bryce, last night. And one of the points he brought up is you potentially have people going back into the competition in Marcel and the other Leanne and Kwame. We'll talk about how Jen is not part of that group anymore. But you potentially have people going back into the competition to battle against people they've never even met.
It makes no sense to me. And imagine as a viewer, you're watching this. You don't watch Last Chance Kitchen at all. It's not interesting to you. You're here for the TV show. And then like 3 weeks before the finale, this person shows up from like 10 seasons ago that you don't remember. And like now that person has a chance to win it all. It just like makes no sense from a television standpoint either. Like it feels like they're trying to alienate their audience, and for what reason?
Yes, somebody on Anna on Twitter actually said that for her, having the returnees compete on Last Chance Kitchen actually got her to watch Last Chance Kitchen for the first time ever, but really thinks it's weird that they're not featured on the main show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that like, I guess it's a way to sort of like, I mean, I think it's always tough for them to sort of have LCK exist as this online only thing and try to say like, hey, people, you need to check this out. I mean, I know they usually do, even before like the person returns from LCK, they try to like condense everything into one show and throw it on TV beforehand. So I guess this is the way of them thinking like, this might draw people in, is them saying like, hey, remember Marcel, remember Kwame? They're going to be competing on this thing, so check it out now.
But like, I don't remember Marcel. I don't remember Leanne. I don't remember Jen.
What?
I started watching recently, right?
And okay.
So I've seen the most recent, like, I'd say 7 or 8 seasons, but I don't know them because they came from like the first set of seasons that I haven't seen yet. Like, I know who Kwame is and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that answers my question then. If I would assume you were the most excited to see Kwame because he's the only one you know.
Yeah, like, because he was the only one I was like, oh yeah, that guy.
What about you, Kurt?
The person who always ends up drafting the vanilla white guy for the show, you know, I guess Marcel kind of falls within that. I'm trying to remember what the name of his show was, but it was like, I apologize. He's not listening to this. But it was like Marcel's, I want to say Cutthroat Kitchen, but that's obviously a different show, but there was a 6-episode show that focused on him kind of, you know, doing off the wall, interesting catering jobs for people. And it was actually, I actually found it, you know, very interesting. And he has been one of my favorite characters from the previous seasons. So I was actually really happy to see him back. And obviously the way that Jen Carroll left during her last episode, during her last go through, I was curious what kind of presence she was going to bring to the show. But it turns out she's kind of a softer, kinder Jen Carroll.
Yeah, she's much like a croquette. She's rough on the outside, but soft on the inside. I was happy to see, you know, I've been a little trepidatious about, I know when Casey came on last season, I was like, well, I don't think we need like to see people their third time out. So I felt good about Jen, though. I'm using the past tense again because she was eliminated, because she did last such a short amount of time on All Stars that it almost feels like it doesn't count. So, and she was such a big, I mean, Top Chef Las Vegas, talk about a season where they really cut out the chaff, and like the top four were the only four that ever won elimination challenges. And so I was happy to see her back. I was so happy to see Kwame. I was a big fan of Kwame a couple seasons ago. Leanne, I was happy to see, like, I like them always when they acknowledge their old school seasons. But the weird thing about Leanne is that Leanne is more entrenched with Bravo than any of the other contestants, because I'm pretty sure she was like the culinary producer on like seasons 2 through 6 or something of Top Chef. And so you have to wonder, I'm assuming production has changed, but you have to wonder, like, if someone has that insidery type of knowledge, will that work to benefit them? Though she's also added on to the fact that she is engaged and she is pregnant. So that throws a bunch more things in there. Marcel, I do. It's interesting because I rewatched season 2 in preparation for last season, to sort of when we got Sam back. And Marcel is almost like the Jerry Manthe of Top Chef, where like he's regarded as like this big villain at the time. But if you look back and watch it, like, it's not terrible. Yeah, he's a little smug and douchey talking about molecular gastronomy, but there was a lot of poor behavior that season that, like, I wouldn't say he necessarily warranted all the stuff that happened to him, especially that unfortunate head shaving incident. But all that being said, Marcel has been on so many cooking shows that, like, I don't know if I need to see him, you know?
And just so I'm covering myself, his the show of his that I watched was Marcel's Quantum Kitchen, not to be confused with Marcel's Kwame Kitchen.
that might be a new spinoff, considering that they seem to be getting along.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know, it's just, there was something about his interest. I like, even though he's like Marcel minus, like, with less foam than he normally did before, I'm actually happy to see him back. I would not mind. I was glad to see that he was not eliminated in either of the rounds of Last Chance Kitchen, and I'm hoping he goes far. But again, like, I don't know if I want one of these returning chefs to be the one that actually comes back. That's the only thing.
All right, well, let's talk about this first challenge here of two. In 20 minutes, cook a dish that represents where you're coming from right now. I guess I'll go in like the order that Tom puts them. Leanne is number one with her cauliflower soup, ground lamb, and flatbread. By the way, they also can only pick 5 ingredients among themselves. Number two is Marcel, Wolf Marcel, with the Vadovan lamb rack, olive, pine nuts, fennel fronds. Shout out to Kurt, fennel pollen. Shout out to Kurt, number two, and roasted cauliflower.
When one of the 5 ingredients was fennel, I like flipped the table. I'm like, I'm not watching this.
You're going to pull a Josh and just swear off Last Chance Kitchen. Kwame comes in at number 3 with Moroccan lamb stew, Castrovano olives, a little bit of fennel. And Jen is unfortunately eliminated for her lamb croquettes. Haley, do you feel like this was the right decision to have Jen go?
Yeah, I think so. Everything else just looked better. I love when dishes can be more vegetable based, like this, the cauliflower soup. Like, I just kind of find them more interesting. I'm not like a vegetarian by any means. I think it's cooler when they can have the vegetable as the focus rather than the meat, because that, you know, it just flips it on the head. Yeah. I don't know. Like, again, I'm just so like down on this because it just doesn't really make sense to me.
Well, maybe this will perk you up a little bit, because our second LCK challenge this week involves potatoes, to use Marcel's horrible Irish accent.
Did you catch the title of the challenge? All the Spuddin. That was like the highlight of Last Chance Kitchen for me, was the title of the second episode.
So we have Melissa now coming in to compete against Kwame, Marcel, and Leanne. Jen starts off the peanut gallery that will now soon grow, especially because now we'll have 15 chefs in the competition and 4 additional chefs in LCK. So it's going to be like a full packed audience.
You've almost got yourself a season of Artie the One.
Yeah, basically, though no one will win $1 million, much like season 5. So the challenge is make a dish featuring potatoes. Haley, what did you think about the way these potatoes turned out for all these folks?
I thought it was a really baller move just to go for French fries like Marcel did. Just French fries and nothing else. Like, amazing. Like, what a good idea, because it's kind of like you're putting all your eggs in this basket and doing something really simple. So it has to just be like outstanding. And his French fries were, he was the one who won the challenge here. And Tom said these were the best fries he's ever had. The dipping sauce looked amazing. Was this the one where Leanne did a scallop?
Yeah.
scallops are to me as fennel is to Kurt, not because I don't like them. I love them, but I'm allergic to them. So I feel like scallops is one of the most overused things on these shows because they're not super easy to cook, but I think it shows cooking technique in a short amount of time. So that's why they're so popular. So anytime there's a scallop on there, I get a little bored, honestly, because it's hard to do something super inventive with a scallop. What was Kwame's dish again?
He went for a potato écrasé, I think is what it's called, which is like potatoes that are broken and cooked in butter, which sounds fantastic.
Yeah, add butter to anything.
Crispy pancetta, yeah.
Melissa's move to have like a salmon dish with potatoes wasn't a great idea to me. I don't know. I don't think you should be making a meal here. I think you should do what Marcel did and like focus on potato and making like the best damn potato thing you can make.
And I really liked like when, you know, even though, you know, Marcel's known for his molecular gastronomy, but he's supposedly walked back from it. You know, Tom calls him out a little bit. He said, wait a minute, you're getting out the liquid nitrogen.
He had a reason for it.
He did. And I thought that was really interesting and something I obviously like. I'm now like, you know, obviously not a chef by any means, but learning things. But, you know, he's freezing the blanched potatoes before flash frying them. So it gets more of that kind of authentic feel, restaurant feel. And, you know, and Tom's kind of recognizing this and questioning him on it. And Marcel's like, that's exactly what I'm doing. And he was like, at the same time, he's like kind of like humble and just very straightforward about it. I don't know. I just really liked that whole simple rationale for why he was doing what he was doing.
Yeah. And he wasn't doing it for the sake of having like science in there. Like he was
exactly.
Like, this is, you know, I'm doing this for a reason. And yes, it's old Marcel a little bit, but this is why. And it worked out for him. And that's great.
Yep. So him and Kwame end up in the top for their potato dishes. Leanne and Melissa are on the bottom. Leanne's dish was a little too complicated. I think Tom called it a roller coaster when he walks up to it. And it didn't necessarily make him feel like you usually do when you get off a roller coaster, but it was still not seasoned enough. I also love, by the way, I think it was the first LCK challenge that Tom basically lists his like stratification of how he judges foods. And the number one thing he always looks to a meal for is whether or not it's well seasoned enough. So she basically broke rule number one here.
And I think also, and the not just the entire dish being seasoned, but making sure that the individual elements are also properly seasoned. I think the reason that Leanne came in third was it seemed like, you know, she was trying to do something interesting from an architectural perspective. I think the roller coaster that Tom was referring to was like kind of about the cuts that she was making and how like everything was kind
of potato was like a swirl. Like it was like, okay.
Yeah. And it seems to focus much more on the kind of this scallop and andouille sausage blend. And it didn't necessarily highlight the potatoes as much.
Yeah, when it's a potato challenge, you focus on the potato. Like both Leanne and Melissa made that mistake where Kwame and Marcel really focused on the potato.
Yeah.
And on top of that, guess what? Another burnt chip we have. Unfortunately, poor Tom has just been eating so many bitter burnt chips in the past day or so. And in addition, I know Melissa said, like, I can do fish. No worries. A little bit of a five hole here for Miss Melissa as the salmon gets overcooked.
Yeah, I did worry a little bit at the point where she's like, the nice thing about doing salmon is I know how to do salmon. That's going to be a walk in the park. I can just put it in the pan, let it cook, and I can really focus on the potato. It turned out the potato, I mean, apart from that chip being a little burnt, you know, Tom says your potato was cooked nicely, but the salmon was overcooked and she didn't, you know, her economy of time was not, divided equally amongst the elements of her dishes.
Do you think that might have just been chalked up to the fact that, again, she's completely new to this type of environment? Whereas, again, it's been a while for Leanne, but she at least has some experience. I know we talked about this a lot last season about how the veterans had a huge advantage over the newbies, which is why so many newbies went home to begin with. Do you think we might have faced a similar context here?
Potentially. I don't know how she other than having a couple panic attacks, I don't know how she necessarily prepared for this. Like I would have Like I would have put together, you know, we hear about people who are auditioning for, you know, going to be on Survivor or auditioning for like American Ninja Warrior, that they'll develop obstacle courses to run themselves through. I think if I was a chef and I was about to go on a show like this, I would create some sort of like, not even a restaurant, I would create some sort of kind of fill in the blanks challenge for my staff to run me through in terms of like, okay, I'm going to do this, but you have to like kind of you pick the ingredient, make it a little bit Iron Chef-y in terms of, you know, come up with some interesting challenge for me. I would have tried to like, you know, limit myself or, you know, time myself on cooking things in certain time periods. But something we haven't really talked about is like how these chefs potentially prepare themselves to go on a show like this. I mean, other than having a bunch of recipes in your back pocket, and we even heard from Tyler say, he's not going to use it. He wants to come on here to cook a bunch of things he's never cooked before. So I think that's one way that he's exercising flexibility as Laura was. But in other cases, I'm just wondering, how do chef testants prepare / train to be on a show like Top Chef? I'm just really curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, now we have a prime opportunity to ask that. So I will put that in my little pocket along with a burnt chip and I'll pull that out later. Kurt, any other questions we have from the listeners before we jump into the draft that we do and all of the potpourri?
We covered most of it actually in our discussions. I think one question that we had from rap patron Dave Baker was apparently they previewed the use of Rocky Mountain oysters later this season. Is there any other kind of Colorado / mountain food that you'd like to see as part of a challenge this season?
Pot brownies.
Yeah, I was gonna go. I'm wondering if they're going to do, and I already know the answer is probably gonna be no. I was wondering if there was gonna be some sort of edibles challenge later on. I just can't necessarily see them going there, but I think it would be interesting. And then patron Steve Keynes asked, if you could have picked returning chefs to be on Last Chance Kitchen, who would you have gone with?
Oh God, there's so many to choose from. Should we like limit it to? I don't know. Should we try to limit ourselves to not like strain our brains trying to pick from hundreds of chefs?
Or just like just top of mind. Like it's like, is there anybody that you would just like to have seen be on it? I don't know if you have to like for me, it's someone who hasn't necessarily won. I would have actually liked to have seen potentially Nina come back.
Yeah. So I guess the question is like, are we going to go back to Haley's question though? Like, should we pick people that we want to see again, or do we want to say like, no, we should save that person? Because like, I would love to see Marjorie or Isaac back personally. There are a lot of people from season 13 that I would love to see back. Oh, so I'm happy that
is Marjorie the one that I liked.
Yeah, she was the Eeyore of the competition.
Yeah, I like her.
Pasta Mama,
but,
yeah.
But I want to waste her on a last season. Or like a Sylvia from last season, who I love. I don't want to waste her on a Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah, well, or could you do like more of a second chance thing and bring in someone like Jim's, for example, who like placed like 10th last season, and like, so it wasn't necessarily like a high enough spot to warrant maybe an all-star season, but like, hey, here's your second chance. You can come back and do better.
Yeah, that would make more sense to me if it was like, you know, the first couple eliminated. Or I would have liked to see like bring back four people who went out first.
All right. Well, then, shall we segue into the competitive aspect of the Chop Top Chef Judges Roundtable, our seasonal chef testant draft? Kurt, do you want to lay down the guidelines for this?
Sure. Okay. So we have three of us, myself, Haley, and Mike, and I randomized the picking order, and it's going to go myself, Haley, Mike, but we're going to do a snake draft. So then Mike will get third pick and then fourth pick, and we'll bounce back up again. So it'll go Kurt, Haley, Mike, Mike, Haley, Kurt, Kurt, Haley, Mike, etc. There's currently 14 people left in the formal competition, still on the TV televised show. However, we do know that we will get a Last Chance Kitchen returnee. That will be the 15th draft option, and that is who I drafted last year. I got Brooke when she returned from Last Chance Kitchen, even though she wasn't part of my original draft, and she ended up winning. So there are 15 possible individuals to draft, again with that 15th spot being the wild card returnee. If something funky happens where there's a couple rounds of Last Chance Kitchen returnees, like they do a la Redemption Island on Survivor, where someone comes back mid competition and then again at the end, or if multiple people come back in the competition, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But otherwise, we will each end up having a team of five people.
I'm excited about this because last time I did a draft with Haley, I spanked her and Amy, but I feel like the karma is going to balance totally in my direction again, and I'm going to get the short end of the stick.
How dare you? How dare you bring that up here?
So if I'm going first, and I'm really not happy that I drew that, I think there's so many good people on here that I'm gonna have to go with my heart, and I'm going to have to do my first pick of Joseph from Chicago, just because he's my hometown guy here.
I was wondering because like I was wondering, like, okay, who's the quote unquote boring white guy? Who's Kurt's type? But I honestly feel like, again, this was such a fun premiere to get so much from these chefs that I feel like even Joseph, who probably might be the most like mild mannered out of all of those types, like he still has a personality.
Yeah, there's no boring white guys on this season. There's, I think, he's maybe the most mainstream.
He was my choice for Kurt Clark pick, to be honest with you.
Okay, good. Good. I'm glad I didn't disappoint them. But just because he is the most expected pick for me, and also that he is hometown Chicago, I had to pick Joe for my number one draft pick. Even though he was not he did really well in the quickfire, even though he wasn't in the top in the elimination challenge, I'm not upset about this pick.
All right, Haley, does that mean you're going to pick Laura? Is she your hometown girl?
Do you know how far Alaska is away from me?
I probably live closer to Laura than Haley does.
Okay, I'm going with Fatima. She's my girl. She's my favorite. I love her, so she's probably going to go next week.
I love Fatima as well. She seems like a lot of fun, and she's my hometown girl, I guess, considering she resides in New York City. I might have to.
Okay, at least 50% of them live in Brooklyn or some, like, you know, like some New York suburb.
It's only Fatima and Adrian's here too, and Chris is in Brooklyn. That's only three. I'm really happy to get my next two picks because these are going to be my top two picks, and I thought you guys were going to take them. Give me Chris and Tyler. I feel like they both did really well in this challenge. I know that I have a feeling Tyler might not win just because he did win the first challenge, but we already had a bald guy win two seasons ago with Jeremy, and they want to space it out a little bit. Tom doesn't want to be accused of any sort of like biases, but I like them both, and I love to keep Tyler around just for the confessionals. And I feel like Chris crushed it in both of these challenges. So even if it's just to mean that I can explore what Amish soul means a little bit more, I'm going to take both those guys.
Okay. It's back to you, Haley.
Okay. Give me Tanya.
Oh, darn it. Okay. That was going to be my next pick. Oh, so that I get two back to back. I think that was a solid pick. Okay. Huh. I can't give away my strategy here. So I will pick, back to back, I'm going to go with, I have to say he's going to learn from his mistake, and I'm going to pick two.
Ooh, your number two pick.
My two is my number two pick. Good picking up on that. This is the point where I make the risky move, for someone who didn't necessarily stand out in the first episode, but didn't necessarily do bad. And just because I always like the fish out of water story, I'm picking Laura.
Ooh, I'm surprised that she went for so early on, but I feel like she could be one of these random people who like ends up doing really well. I mean, that adaptability might really come in handy, especially if a moose comes into the middle of the challenge and starts eating all their food.
Yeah.
Alaskan salmon out of water.
There we go. It's back to you, Haley.
Okay. Give me Claudette.
Pick. Claudette. Oh, I didn't think that she would last till back to get back around to me, but she was next on my list. Okay. And back-to-back picks for you, Mike.
You guys are writing this down, right? Because I am writing this down. I'm doing.
Okay, yes, cool, I'm writing this down. I can prompt you to let you know who's
left. Later. If I try and claim someone who's already claimed, let me know.
Okay.
All right. Give me Mr. That's What She Said. Give me Joe Stash. And just for the name alone, give me Mr. Purple Potato's Brother Luck.
Joe Stash and Brother Luck are off the table. Do you need a refresher? There's five draws left, Haley.
No, I'm going with Adrian.
Okay. And I get my last two picks back to back here. So I can be complete. I'm not. Here's the thing. Like often in previous drafts, I'll go for like, well, this person is like, didn't do great on the first episode or the most recent episode. And they'll turn it around. And that rarely is the case. So I am going to go with. So we've got Bruce, Carey, Rogelio, and Last Chance Kitchen Returnee. I am going to go with Bruce and just hope that the altitude is kind to him. I'm not going to go for Last Chance Returnee because I don't think we can have lightning strike twice.
Or three times.
Back to back. Yeah, three times or two seasons back to back at least. Can Carey turn it around? Rogelio's croquettes weren't amazing. I can't bank on Carey. I got to take Rogelio.
Okay.
So you have your choice between Carey and the Last Chance Kitchen Returnee.
Come along, Carey. Let's do this.
And you cap your Brother Luck pick is picked with the lucky Last Chance Kitchen Returnee, Mike.
Oh, great. So the thing that did me in last season is the one that I have now.
Yes. What's the Haley spotting supporting the all female team here?
I was wondering if someone was going to notice.
And I have a nice balance. Well, I have Laura.
You have one woman. Well, congratulations.
Congratulations. Well, I'm also wondering, like, 15 was a weird number to start out with this season. I'm wondering if somebody dropped out late in the running, but you took my Claudette and my Tanya.
Well, I'm sorry. I wasn't the one who had two picks back to back each time.
That's true.
But I like these teams. I'm very excited to see. I'm very excited by this group overall, and I'm excited to see. No matter who ends up winning, it's probably not going to be me. But I'm excited to see how it plays out.
And then just to recap the teams, Team Kurt is Joseph, 2, Laura, Bruce, and Rogelio. Haley has Fatima.
I think it's Fatima.
Okay, Fatima, Tanya, Claudette, Adrian, and Carey, and Mike. Team Mike is Chris, Tyler, Joe Stash, Brother Luck, and the Last Chance Kitchen Returnee. So it could end up being actually, you know, any of the folks on if they get booted and come back. So those are our three teams of five.
Awesome. All right. Well, I guess to close things out, I have a couple things that I want to talk about. So like I mentioned before, I went to the 92nd Street Y to participate. God, that would be nerve wracking to spectate in a sit down panel with Padma, Tom, Gail, Graham, and a food critic was the moderator. Though, to be honest, like, these are such magnetic personalities that he really had no hold on the situation. I mean this in the best possible way. Like, it was honestly the judges just shooting the shit for an hour. It was a lot of fun to watch, but it had absolutely no structure to it whatsoever.
Yeah, I wish I'd been in. I remember that you had sent me a message on Facebook that it was coming up. I'm like, oh, if only I was able to make it to New York from Chicago for that. But it sounded like a really great opportunity.
Yeah, so a few fun things that were said in there. There were a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Like I mentioned before, Padma said she was puking between takes in the opening shot. She also mentioned that on every season, she gains probably like between 10 to 15 pounds because unlike the other judges, she's at the quick fire and the elimination, so she's eating every single dish. And so she really has to like almost like purge herself. I think she has something called like grape Drano or something, which is like honestly like a concoction that she like uses to flush her system. Of course, things came back to the controversial Nick versus Nina finale, and Tom,
well, I don't know what's controversial about that. It was the right
Nick was boring.
Never mind.
So Tom decides to step in and defend himself, giving Nick the win. The judges also both all pushed for either an all winner season or an all runners up season, which either one I think would be interesting.
Yeah, agreed.
We get a question of like who would each judge want to make their last meal. Padma, I know she mentioned that Chris and Kish cooked a lot for her beforehand, so she says her name. Graham says Stephanie from season 4. Tom says either Gregory, Nina, or just May's dessert from the finale. And Gail going back to season 9 mentions Sarah, the runner-up from that season. And Tom mentions that the person he's always saddest to leave is the first one out. And Melissa herself seemed very sad to leave as well. So lots of tears going on.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to mention quickly is Top Chef Junior premiered a couple months before the season did. I was a little late to the bandwagon, but I decided to check it out. I would encourage you all to as well. The Survivor offseason is coming up, so reality TV schedules are going to become a lot more freer. It's on Universal Kids. I was able to check it out through Hulu. So if you have that, sorry, Haley, feel free to check it out and catch up. It's hosted
by... That's one myth that's true. Hulu is not available in Canada.
Well, I'm glad we finally found out some true facts about Canada in this podcast. But it's hosted by a former Dancing with the Stars competitor, Vanessa Lachey. Curtis Stone is the Tom Colicchio, who also has some Top Chef experience. I believe he was the host of Top Chef Masters as well. And the kids are very precocious, but... man, are they good chefs. It's actually really interesting comparing Master Chef Junior with Top Chef, where the parallels continue from the adult version to the kids version, where there definitely are personalities with the kids, but they pride cooking above all else. And it's absolutely insane to see what they crank out every week.
I know on Master Chef Junior, I watched a season of that, and it seemed to me that the, you know, I liked seeing, well, Graham Elliott, I believe, was one of the judges on Master Chef Junior. And obviously you have Gordon Ramsay, who like a softer, you got to see the softer side of Gordon. But it did seem like they were adults talking to kids. Whereas the way I imagine Top Chef Junior potentially happening is they maybe treat them more as equals. Is that the case? Or does it still kind of just very much here's candy and we're going to do stuff with candy. Like they have done a MasterChef Junior.
No, they do a couple of those challenges. They're like, make a cupcake. But no, otherwise it's like very much more refined. And I think the recurring motif throughout the show is like, wow, I can't believe you're this good. And they also, I'm happy about the show because they bring in a lot of alumni. I mean, it's pretty much, you know, it's Vanessa, Curtis and Gail pretty much as the third judge. But like, the vestigial fourth judge is pretty much either like Antonia or Tiffany Derry. So I love both of them. There was one episode where they brought in a bunch of alumni. They brought in like Katsuji, Kwame, Amar, just sort of Shirley just came in to just sort of judge a competition. There was one episode where they had the Voltaggio brothers like draft teams of kids and face off against each other. And Brian was as boring as you remember. Don't worry.
If I had been doing a draft, Brian's like Brian and Carl Dooley are like two of the four Mount Rushmore of my boring contestant draft faces.
But you can't make a round Rushmore. You need four, Kurt. Let's remember that. That's what we learned today.
That's true. Yes.
So I would definitely recommend people check it out. I think they've aired like 9 episodes up to this point. They also have this weird mechanic where they have a save system where there's like 15 jars. And each eliminated contestant walks over to pick a random jar. And if there's a saved token in it, then they're saved. I've been talking with the great Mel God Starved about this as to whether or not they're like, whether or not it might be a little bit of tinfoil hat. Like, did they place it in there or is it completely random? But it's an interesting system because I think the worst part by far is like watching children's dreams get crushed.
Is it kind of like that return pass from Big Brother two summers ago?
It's more like I would say it's like the judge's save from American Idol. You got the save tonight. That means you're not going home. So I would definitely recommend it. Feel free to check it out if you want to in your own spare time. But after all that Top Chef omnibus, we finally come to the end of this podcast. Thank you all for listening. Haley, Kurt, I am so excited to get back on board doing some Top Chef coverage with you guys. Haley, maybe we'll find out a little bit more about Canada as we journey through Colorado here.
One can only hope.
Well, how can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @hstrong_. On my Instagram, I do post a lot of food pictures. So if you're in it for the food, then come hang out with me there.
They are great. I rarely comment on Instagram pictures. When I do, it's usually Haley's and I'm going, oh, that looks great.
Yeah. Or, oh, you went to Olive Garden? How dare you?
It's one or the other, really. Kurt, what about you?
I am at Kurt Clark on all your social media platforms. That's with 2 C's. Also, lots of food pictures for me as well.
And you can find me at a Mike Bloom type. No food pictures, but my food pictures are replaced with plugs for all of the podcasts that I do. So you really pick your poison there. Speaking of the other podcasts that I do a weekly podcast here on reality TV over Hap Up called the RHAP B&B with Liana Boris, playing a bunch of fun and games around the most recent episode of Survivor. Kurt and Haley were both guests on earlier on this season. We just finished up an episode with the great Lita Brillman. Liana was unfortunately, Haley mentioned the snow in Louisiana before. She was waylaid and grounded. So Paul Osselson got to step in and record that with us. Speaking of Paul Osselson, I also had him sub in for Rich Tackenberg on the SNL recap this week with James Franco, which should be in your feeds as well. Be sure to check out my parade.com interviews that I do. I'll be doing one with Melissa coming up in the next couple days. I do them every week with the Survivor Eliminated contestant. And I also previewed the Amazing Race 30 team. So be sure to check that out if you're in the mood for reality TV. And if you're in the mood for reality TV, you should definitely subscribe to this feed and the reality TV Rehap Ups feed, which has so much going on all year round. But of course, we really appreciate you subscribing to our Top Chef only feed and giving all the ratings and reviews that you can, especially with this new season rolling around. The more ratings and reviews we get, the higher we appear on the iTunes charts. So please give us a rating and review if you can. We really appreciate it. And just let us know your thoughts on the season overall up to this point. You can always reach out to us on social media. To finish things off, let's think of a hashtag, people. What do we want to go with here?
I'm all for screw fennel as a hashtag.
Bias there. I was thinking
either, I'm fine with it.
I was thinking either that or Claudette side eye or crutch stash.
Ooh, Claudette side eye is good.
Yeah, now that we've got expanded character usage on Twitter, let's go with Claudette side eye.
Perfect. So let us know your thoughts about this episode. Let us know whose team you support as well as we move into episode 2 of Top Chef season 15. Haley, Kurt, thank you both so much for coming back. I'm really excited to see where the judges roundtable goes this season. And now, everyone, you may pack your knives and go.